Come and dream with me.
Hello and welcome to Body Wouldn't Watch the Exposure Network's premier media podcast. Every week we get together and talk about movies, TV and online content and help you answer the question, is Bluey the best TV show going at the moment? I'm your host, Ash Shelby. Joining me today, Dylan Blight.
Probably.
I think it might be the most watched TV show at the moment. Might be more accurate. So I feel like every day I've been seeing non-stop Bluey posts.
Well, it's global now, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming now they're like releasing it in America at the same time as they're releasing it over here. I think there was a delay before, but okay. I've seen a lot of people reacting to
that in America.
Yeah, the new episode.
Okay. I saw a lot of Australians reacting to it. I haven't seen any Americans, so, but it could be, yeah.
Yep. So, Bluey, big 28 minute episode this week that apparently had a lot of adults crying in front of their children.
They move.
Or do they?
They get fish and chips.
There's a wedding. It's beautiful. Anyway, on today's episode, we'll be talking about what's in a watch this week, going over some film news, giving this week's top three, giving some thumbs trailers, and we'll do an update to our What Do You Want to Watch movie critic fantasy game. We'll kick things off with Civil War, one of the most divisive movies
Iron Man,
of the year.
Baby. Oh, sorry. No, never mind. Sorry. Keep going. Sorry. I thought that was...
A24 Civil War, directed by Alex Garland, written by Alex Garland, which follows a group of journalists in the final days of the American Civil War.
The second one.
A modern American Civil War. who decide to go to Washington, D.C. to interview the president before he gets killed, they believe. Kristen Dunst plays Lee,
that's all I remember.
Lee, a decorated war photojournalist who did a lot of photography overseas. Then you've got Kaylee Spaney, who is an upstart photojournalist who kind of talks her way into joining the group to go to.
She's like, Washington. This seems like it's a good time to have a career aspiration.
Yeah, this is what I want to do with my life, and I think I should follow you after you save me from an IED. I think that's right.
Yep.
Obviously, this movie has gotten a lot of coverage, and also it's been quite divisive, basically because of a lot of the lore around the movie, which the movie isn't really interested in, which I, you know... it's not really the important story here. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fantastic movie, really thrilling at certain points. Obviously, it is really just a story about these journalists or photographers like covering the events of a war. I think this movie, we've seen this kind of movie before, but it's always somewhere else. It's like in Korea or like some other war-torn area. It's just kind of more impactful that it's in America. And, you know, it's definitely a road trip movie, kind of, where there's little snippets, there's different little...
Oh, it's a
little stories.
Road trip movie, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's all these little encounters and that kind of things, some more harrowing than others. I think it's really well done. Great performances. Kristen Dunst is fantastic. Kaylee Spaney, brilliant. Someone I probably need to see more stuff of. I thought it was brilliant. Dylan, what do you think?
Yeah, I got everything you said. Just again, I feel like this is one of, you know, alongside Dune Part 2 is like one of the best movies of the year so far, easily. It has, I guess, on everything you said is correct. I think, like, I especially think Kirsten Dunst is fantastic in this. Like, says so much with so little in every scene she's in, which is just fantastic. Also, Wagner Moura is really, really good in this. I think of it, unless people like, I guess he's most known for like Narcos, but this like gets to show another side of him to English American audiences, I guess. I think it is probably one of the best modern war movies as well. Like, I was trying to think of, like, what other sort of war movies come out in recent memory that had the same sort of effect that this has. I can't really think of anything else. Like, with, like, war movies sort of got turned into an American propaganda genre.
Yeah.
So I think this is, like, the first one I've watched in ages where I was like, wow, that's, like,
really... it's an anti-war movie. But it's whereas a lot of other Americans are like, yeah, America, being in war's cool. Well,
there was an interview of Alex Garland I watched today where the interviewer asked him about everything that people were making fun of, the, you know, Texas and California teaming up. And he was like, well, and his answer, long short of it, was literally the idea was to show that, you know, in a, you know, even two opposing political states would team up in this.
In an event where somebody is doing something even worse than...
Yeah, there's a president, there's a tyrannical president that's that bad that he's like, I purposely sort of teamed up two very different politically ideological states. Mm. That was the whole idea. And everyone, when the trailer was out, was like, this movie's dumb.
I feel like, I also feel like this movie plays different to anyone not from America. Because maybe I don't have those close ties. We don't have, not everybody in America, anyone outside America doesn't have, like, doesn't understand maybe 100% the political ties to within America.
I feel like most people, because America's, like, the most, obviously, like
I think everybody outside America is like, oh, California, Texas, they're big states, I understand. They show up in a lot of stuff. It makes sense they'll team up. Florida, it makes sense that they'd be taken over a bunch of people, all those Florida men. Going over
the
place.
Before the movie came out, a lot of people, I saw people theorizing online, it was because they were like highly high population of like non-white people in those states, and they were theorizing that could have been the reason, which, you know, he's like, that
maybe
as well. I mean, anyway, it doesn't matter.
I mean, the potential is there that if Alex Garland wanted to, he could do a full...
That's his last movie.
No, like in another format or something, he could just like fill out the background lore. But I don't think it's important. No. Really?
I don't think it's important. It doesn't need to be. The whole point of the movie is,
like, I think the movie actually makes it very clear why certain groups have decided, you know.
I mean, it can, but again, the thing is, it doesn't matter. Like, the movie, no,
it's not the,
like,
most important element of the movie.
The movie starts 14 months into a civil war. It says, here's what's happening. These sides are fighting. Let me show you something bad this side's doing. Let me show you something bad this side's doing. They hate each other. The movie's from the point of view of journalists trying to do straight journalistic work, which is, you know, neutral ground, just there to capture it as it is and send it out. Not there to have a say, not there to pick a side, not there to, you know, just take and pick it out.
Which may be the most unrealistic element of this movie.
Yeah.
The fact that these journalists are not constantly shot at in all these situations.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe, I don't know, you know. There's a lot of journalists that go cover, like, there's a lot of journalists in, like, Iran and fucking wherever else at the moment, obviously covering what's going on there that I'm sure aren't getting shot at. But it's the, you know, one out of however many that gets, like, kidnapped and whatever else. Yeah, I mean, it just boils down to basics, and I think that's such a fantastic lens to have for a film like this. I think the cinematography is fantastic. The visuals he's able to craft within this, you know, very modern looking sort of war torn America's, without going too over the top and making it look like a apocalypse, is phenomenal. I think the sound design is absolutely insane. That last half hour is both utterly, like, you know, intense as fuck and makes your heart rate go up, but also I think the sound design with all the guns and shit that's happening in that last, like, sort of sequence is definitely some of the best guns I've heard in anything.
I mean, not even that, like, the absence of the sound, like, early in the start of the film, like, there's an, like I said, a bomb that goes off and it just goes silent. It's like, I could hear chip packets rattling and other stuff in the cinema.
I was about to crack a drink as happened, and I just sat there like,
no, I need to wait till there's something.
And I waited until this noise came back, and I was like, I mean, I don't I honestly don't really have anything bad to say. I feel without nitpicking and stuff like that. I thought it was like really phenomenal. Easily going to be one of the year's best movies.
Yeah, I'd love some things to like be fleshed out a little bit more. I would have loved to have seen Nick Offerman's president a little bit more.
Why?
I would love to see more of the background stuff fleshed out a little bit more, but it's fine. I can live without it. I think Nick Offerman's like, because he does an opening speech where he's practicing this bullshit speech that he's going to deliver to the country at the start. And I think, you know.
With a combination of real world footage cut into there as well. From current events over the last like 5 years, I think.
Yeah. So. Yes, Civil War. Go see it. Number one at the American box office this week, surprisingly, given how people have been reacting to it. But it's fantastic. So Fallout, the new Prime Video TV series based on the beloved video game series, released in fall this past week. Dylan, you've watched all of it. I've watched like 4 episodes. For anyone who doesn't know what Fallout is, it's set in a world in which there are a bunch of
200 odd years after
post-apocalyptic, set in a post-apocalyptic world where there's massive nuclear fallout. A bunch of rich people were allowed to go into vaults to survive from the nuclear fallout. And they've kind of for 200 and something years they've been in their vaults, like kind of, you know, waiting for the radiation levels to drop down. But outside, humanity has sort of survived. But, you know, it's gone to shit. So we follow Lucy, who's a vault dweller. Their vault is raided, and her father is kidnapped, so she ventures into the wasteland to go rescue her dad. Meanwhile, we've got a character called Maximus, who is joined up as part of the Brotherhood of Steel, which is a militant, very medieval themed group who have massive mech suits of armor that their knights wear, who try and bring justice to the wasteland, I guess, who aspires to be a knight. And we also get the ghoul, who is a someone who was alive when the bombs dropped, but has, because of the radiation, has turned into this other being and has lived all these years through the use of drugs. And they're all trying to collect this bounty, I guess. Well, there's a bounty with Michael Emerson involved. It's a lot. Dylan, what are your thoughts on Fallout?
Man, when you say it that way, it does sound complicated, doesn't it? I think it's another good video game adaptation. It's a lot of fun. It was easily bingeable. At times the pacing goes all off, a few too many needle drop song moments for me personally, began to wear a bit thin. And I definitely feel like out of the three main characters that it's like definitely not an even balance between all of them. Maximus feeling the least interesting and least developed of all of them, whereas Lucy and Cooper/the ghoul are the most interesting characters that we have. And even to the point that Maximus, as the supposed third lead, I'm nearly just more interested in what's happening back at the vault and stuff like that when it's as these scenes and
stuff. I think like that, there are four like leads. Lucy's brother's the other lead, right?
I mean, yeah, not really. He's not like
I don't know.
He's not in the posters or anything. So, like, the three people on the posters. So, you know, like, it's a lot of fun. I don't think it's to be heralded as the best video game adaptation of all time, as a lot of people have been stating online. Definitely got, it's far from perfect in my mind. But it's a lot of fun, and I'd be keen for a second season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having a really good time as well. Obviously, you know, I've still got like 4 episodes to go. I think they've done a fantastic job of bringing the world of the video games to life, like in a real feasible way. Like the vault tech suits and the Pip-Boys and all the different weapons. You see a junk jet gun at one point. Even the gun that the ghoul uses in his first big shootout where he's got like exploding bullets. That's really cool. Very violent at times. They've done a fantastic job bringing it to life, and like I'm enjoying all the lore that they're introducing to the world. Obviously, this is an original story set in the world of Fallout. In the other games, they're like set in other cities. This one is set in the remnants of Los Angeles. But yeah, they're also like filling in a lot of the backstory that we probably would not get any other way in the video games, because they're set 200 years after the events of the bombs dropping. Walls and Goggles, fantastic. Elepanel's fantastic. The needle drop thing, I get. How do you feel about the discussion going around about this show in particular about it being dropped all at once? Do you think it would have the pulling power to have been released week to week?
Hard to say, because, yeah, I binged it, so.
Yeah.
In general, you know, I lean on the side of enjoy a good week to week. I think every episode has a cliffhanger, and then every episode starts with gives you a fucking previously on that I had to skip every time. So it really does make me feel like it was a last second change, to be honest. So
the other thing I know, the other thing I noticed, I felt there were a lot of clear commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Spots.
There is very clear commercial breaks.
Which maybe they designed knowing that they were going to introduce ads on Prime Video.
Prime, yeah.
Which I haven't had ads here, so that might just be an American thing because, you know. I feel like it's tough. I think it's hard to go this brand new thing. Like, I'm sure the first episode would have done really well. Maybe the second, but I feel like they've probably got numbers saying like what type of shows like kind of drop off as the weeks go on. Like, do I think this show could have sustained a weekly audience like every single week? I don't know. So, and I don't think across the board every single show can sustain.
I nearly a feel like audience. I actually feel like if I was to pick who's sort of got it the right system. I feel like Apple has the right system. For, you know how most of their shows, they drop three episodes and then go week by week?
Mm.
I feel like that's a good way. Three episodes is enough for people to binge three and go, oh, I'm into this or not. And then get them hooked into to going week by week thereafter. But sometimes one isn't enough to really sink your hook into someone, you know?
It's true, but I also feel like there's a lot of shows that people will just like put on the back burner if they have to wait a week and just never end up getting back to.
Guess. I don't know. It's worked for them either way, because it's all everyone's talking about this past week. But
I feel like this show has gotten the most advertising I've seen for anything so far this year. Maybe it's just because of the algorithm, like it's popping up. It everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like bought ad space on like every single gaming website except explosionnetwork.com. And to advertise itself. But Fallout. I'm looking forward to finishing it. Dylan really enjoyed it, so check that out. All right. I went to the cinema and watched Robot Dreams. So this is the Academy Award nominated film from a team in France, I wanna say. Spanish-French independent film. It's written and directed by Pablo Berger and is based on the comic of the same name by Sarah Veron. So it follows it's set in an anthropomorphic world where a bunch of animal-like humans, I guess. You know what anthropomorphic means.
Yes. The animals that move on their back two legs.
So it's set in 1980s New York City, and a dog is living alone in the city and is being very lonely.
Give a dog a dog.
So he sees an ad on television for to get a robot friend. So he immediately calls, gets a robot film friend, builds it himself. They become best buddies, doing everything together. And then on the last day of summer, they go to the beach. And, you know, they're playing at the beach. Robot decides to go in the water. They're having a good time swimming all over the place. They go take a nap on the beach. When they wake up, everybody else on the beach is left. And Robot can't move any of their limbs. He's too heavy for Dog to pick up. So Dog has no choice but to leave him there overnight while he, you know, goes home, gets tools to come and try and fix him. But when he goes back the next day, beach closed, fully fenced off, can't go there, can't get to the beach until next summer. Which, I don't know, maybe that's an American thing. So yeah, it kind of chronicles the year in which, you know, they're separated and how they kind of cope with this separation. Really beautifully animated, 2D animated film. Really interesting world with all the, you know, obviously you've got all these animals over the place doing different things and like trying to live in America, you know, in a New York City-esque life. Very fascinating, very moving at times. Like there's very just very moving. The other thing is there's no spoken dialogue at any point during the movie. It's like nobody talks. They just kind of, everything's looks or points or gestures and that kind of stuff. And a lot of musical cues. A prominent song that is used throughout the film is Earth, Wind & Fire September, weirdly, which plays throughout the entire movie, like is called back to constantly through the film. Yeah, just an incredible movie. I can understand why it was nominated over maybe some more bigger name stuff last year. Just an incredible feat of animation. Really fantastic. I had a great time watching it. Yeah, if you can see Robot Dreams, go check it out. All right, let's move into the mandatory Netflix segment of the show. So I watched a documentary on Netflix called The Anti-Social Network, Memes to Mayhem, which really just kind of chronicles the rise of, I guess, meme culture, or well, it
start. Who invented memes?
Well, yeah, following kind of the origins of it chronicles the rise of 4chan and how it directly influenced events today, like QAnon and the January 6th insurrection and stuff like that. So, yeah, it like talks about the origins of 4chan, how people like were putting memes up and how like from 4chan Anonymous kind of spun out from that, and how they like tackled Scientology and they were tackling some white supremacist radio host and trying to mess with trolling him and that kind of stuff, and like how a lot of people who were involved in the community early on kind of fell away from the hacker community that was kind of part of the 4chan community. Then they also talk about Gamergate and how that like influenced 4chan, and then that also then spun off to 8chan because the people behind 4chan didn't want them talking about Gamergate.
Really, when on 4chan. You explain it like this, it sounds like the dumbest shit ever.
I mean, it really was the dumbest shit ever. Which you can
anyway, Gamergate's back, so
yeah. And it's probably the same sort of people who were on about it the first time, you know, getting very cranky about some sort of innocuous connections between two people. Yeah, I mean, we've seen these kind of documentaries before. I mean, it goes, you know, a little bit slightly different rise. Like, obviously, we had that massive documentary about QAnon that we both really enjoyed.
Binge one or whatever. Was on binge.
Yeah, the binge one. The guy in the wheelchair who's in this one as well. The creator of HN.
Of course. Get that get the paycheck, yo.
I'm surprised, you know, he's still alive, so good for him. yeah, it's kind of like details all these key moments throughout, you know, history and how it's connected to the origins of 4chan and like, and it was really like, and this also explained like a bunch of different memes that I've seen, like the origins of that, like the
I was like, which meme did you need explained?
Just a lot of bad ones that I don't feel like I can repeat on the internet. Because obviously one of their first things was they got really upset that they were banning the, what was it, Haribo Hotel was the thing?
Yeah.
Yes. At one point, they banned a lot of black people from, black avatars from the game for some reason. Mm-hmm. So all the people in 4chan decided, oh, we'll just create a bunch of black characters and we'll just stand by the pool. Mm. And say, we're saving you from AIDS or something. I can't remember. Yep. AIDS is involved somehow.
Yep.
And then that spawned into a thing online. So yeah. Lots of interesting tidbits in this documentary that do like give background reference, I guess, if you're not a person who's constantly online or familiar with the origins of all these meme culture things. So yeah, I mean, it was a fun watch in that regard. So, that was the Antisocial Network Memes to Mayhem. All right. That's everything in our watch history. Let's move into a little bit of film news. And this week, CinemaCon took place in Las Vegas. Of course, CinemaCon, a big, convention that's mostly just, cinema exhibitors.
It's a selling your movie to cinemas, right? That's really what it is.
Yeah, it's like what E3 originally was.
Yeah,
it's like, them, hey, showing.
Here's our movie. Get exhibitors. Excited! You want to, for cinema owners, like especially independent ones or whatever, you want to like buy into this. Like you want to like put.
It's going to be successful. You want to own many screens as possible.
6 of your screens. Yeah. That.
Yeah. So a lot of the studios have like. Presentations. A lot of it isn't for the public. Obviously, we only get like secondhand news through journalists who are there, who have their reactions. I thought the easiest way to cover CinemaCon is with this week's top three.
Definitely in the top three.
This week's top three. Top three most anticipated films from CinemaCon 2024. Film, what's your number three?
My number three, I went with Deadpool and Wolverine. Kind of escaped the, you know, everyone said that they got shown a bunch of stuff. There was a bunch of swearing and violence. All right, sounds good. You know, in a world where, like, I know a lot of Marvel stuff gets me excited, you know, who isn't going to be looking forward to Deadpool and Wolverine? Who isn't looking forward to this movie? Most people are looking forward to this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is going to make a lot of money. So, okay, that's my number three.
All right. My number three is Twisters. Apparently, it looks fantastic. Lots of massive scale Twisters. They're Glenn Powell, Anthony Mormons. Fucking
Margot Robbie just producing board game movie after board game movie after board
no,
game.
No,
ridiculous.
We haven't gotten that. We're talking about Twisters as in the weather event.
Oh, like, okay. Sorry, my bad.
And Daisy Edgar Jones was there. You know, they tried to depict actual Twister on stage with like a fan and an inflatable cow, apparently. I'm sure it was a good bit. And apparently they're going to, in America at least, they're going to have like tubes that you can go to, you can go in and take photos of like.
I thought you was like, they're going to have like, they're just going to create Twisters. Like, send them to
they're
going to
create like mini Twisters and tubes yeah. and, for yeah. photo ops and that kind of stuff.
Right, cool.
So yeah, I mean, I'm excited. Glenn Powell, he's cool.
I mean, I only watched Twister for the first time like a year ago, so sure.
Yeah.
Worked out.
I haven't watched it yet, so I'll have to rectify that.
Yeah.
Dylan, what's number two?
My number two, I went with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. The more and more I read about this film, the more and more it makes me want to rewatch the other ones, in particular, The Last. I feel like I saw someone tweet something today that was like, man, the Apes franchise is probably the closest to Christopher Nolan's Batman franchise. And I knew exactly what they meant because they're right. Like the first film, it's fine. You know, it's like Batman Begins. It's like, it's fine. But then the second one steps it up. It's Dark Knight. You know, it's fucking a whole new level. Then you get the third one, which has some mixed opinions, but it's still a banger. So it's really cool. It's weird. I'm like, you're probably right. That is closest to the Batman Nolan trilogy. Yeah, I mean, I'm really keen for this. It looks really, really good. I think the IMAX trailer that they put out probably shows a bit too much IMO. But anyway, everyone says it looks great. So, I'm too.
All right. My number two, Mufasa Lion King. Barry Jenkins, he's got a good track record. It's not someone you would expect to be making this kind of a movie. Obviously, he's got he's got his whole Moonlight production team on involved in the project. We're going to have a bunch of new original songs from somebody who is not allowed to say, but feel free to speculate.
Beyonce.
Probably. She was involved in the first one, so why not?
Childish Gambino.
Could be. Name any African American music artist who's a massive deal.
He got Brockhampton back together.
And it turns out it's just Elton John again. yeah, I mean, I'm keen to see what this vision is, obviously, you know. I mean, the first movie looked good. Just obviously, you know, we're comparing it to the cartoon. So, doing a completely new story with the art style or that in mind could play differently. So, yeah. I'm definitely keen on that. So, Dylan, what's your number one?
My number one is Alien Romulus. Everyone said it was very good gory footage shown, the main character. Fede Alvarez has a fantastic track record with horror movies. So, you know, after a few mixed films from Sir Ridley Scott, I'm very keen for a new fresh director's eyes on this, I think, is what I'm looking forward to the most.
All right. My number one, Mickey 17, the new film from Bong Joon-ho, which has been delayed till next year. Rotten Patterson stars Mickey 17 as a disposable human on an expedition to colonize an ice planet whose body can be regenerated each time it dies. Apparently, the footage was very out there and wacky. And I'm keen to see Rob Pattinson die a bunch of times, you know, on screen. I just wish it was coming sooner. And it might. We'll see. Yeah. So I've got a few other tidbits or, like, kind of announcements. So you kind of hinted it before. It was announced that Lucky Chat, Margot Robbie's production company, will be bringing the Monopoly movie to the big screen. What are your thoughts on a Monopoly movie?
It's less the Monopoly movie and more the fact that, like, they announced that she's producing this and the Sims. The Sims, wasn't it?
Involved with the Sims, I think, yeah.
Is this all she's going to be, like, and by her involvement, I think it's going to be very minimal on all these things. But it's just very weird that it's like, man, that Barbie movie did so well. Let's ignore everything that made that movie a success and just focus in on the, like, it's a board
behind
game
the scenes person yeah.
thing or like you know whatever, and then let's just get Margot Robbie to agree to put that on the poster, you know, from the from Margot Robbie executive producer of Barbie, put that on the poster and these movies will do well, because that's all I feel it is, right?
Yeah, probably.
It's very weird that she's involved in both, and like,
why
like
not what? I mean, they're probably like, hey, we trust you. Here's this IP. Do something with it. I don't know. Is it the origin stories of the Monopoly Man? That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, he's the brother of Colonel Kentucky, right?
Colonel Mustard.
Colonel Mustard. I think they're connected, right?
Yeah. Who should play the Monopoly Man?
Old mate. There Will Be Blood.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
It's Daniel Day-Lewis, yeah.
Yeah, come out of retirement to play the Monopoly Man.
Why not?
Please. Yeah. Yeah, one final paycheck.
One final performance to go down in the, your IMDb page, the Monopoly movie.
All right. Other announcements. Damien Chazelle. He's out of director's jail. He's going to be making his next film with Paramount with the movie about jail. Is, are you kind of disappointed it's not Babylon 2, Jack's back?
No, I did not want a Babylon sequel. I want justice for Babylon, one of the most underrated movies of the last 10 years. But no, I did not need a sequel to that. He was never in director's jail. No one put him in director's jail. And honestly, I nearly put this as my number one pick because Damien Chazelle doing another movie could have just been my number one pick. But I'm like, it's like, it's not really. It's just like, hey, he's doing a movie with us at Paramount. I'm like, cool. Doesn't do Damien Chazelle has yet to do a bad movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Babylon is a banger.
Here was an interesting one. People got their first look at Smile 2. It's starring Naomi Scott. Mm. And it's going to follow her being a pop star who then causes the smile thing to happen to her fans.
Yeah, it's great. I love that. Apparently they showed some fucked up footage or something. Lucas Gage is in the sequel. Cool. I'm down.
Right.
It's a cool premise. It's a cool way to build upon the lore and everything of the film, I think. You know? Jasmine affects everyone. I don't know. Like
another interesting piece of news. Kendrick Lamar and the South Park creators Trey Parker and Matt Stone are teaming up for an untitled musical that released July next year.
Yeah.
Just a weird combination of people. Apparently, it's about a person who's interning at a Civil War reenactment center who learns that white girlfriend's ancestors owned his ancestors.
Sure. I mean, you say a bunch of words and I go, that separately, they're all things I enjoy. Together, confusion, you know? But put me down for intrigued.
Put you down for intrigued. All right. Kind of unsurprisingly, I guess, that we are going to be getting a live-action, R-rated, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie based on the hit comic series Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Last Ronin.
Now, my question is, you said unsurprisingly. Why do you say that?
I feel like this is the big go-to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles property at the moment. Like, why wouldn't you try and cash in as quickly as possible? I mean, they're already making a video game. I wouldn't be surprised if there is some sort of tie-in. Like, they try and get them around the same time. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, it's the hottest story around Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles out of, you know. I feel like, you know, the hardcore fans who loved the original iteration of the Ninja Turtles, like the original comics where it was like very dark and that kind of stuff, are after something like this, you know, which is going to be very interesting when they have this come out. And then you've also got the Mutant Mayhem next one, which plays to a much more family friendly audience. So, I mean, the interesting thing to me is it's going to be live action like that. I don't love that idea. I think it would have been better if it was animated.
Why? You didn't like the last two live-action Turtles movies? They were so good.
I just think you could do more in the form of animation. You know? Bring back. The final piece of news this week.
Gladiator. We still don't understand the plot.
Well, okay, yes. Gladiator 2 is coming. Mm-hmm. Apparently it looks fantastic. Apparently Paul Mescal fights a Rono. Why not? You know, and we'll fight Pedro Pascal, you know, so I'm keen for that. Number four, probably. Paramount Pictures has announced that it is partnering with Fast and Furious mega producer Neil H. Moritz to resurrect the dormant franchise Scary Movie. Of course, the series spawned five previous films before running out of gas with the 2013 installments. But of course, horror has continued to be a major force at the box office with movies like Five Nights at Freddy's, Smilin's, Megan, drawing big crowds. So there's lots of new material for the Scary Movie team to parody. Dylan, what do you think about them bringing back Scary Movie?
It was magical and it was magic in a bottle for a short period. You cannot, you cannot and will not recreate it. They will fail. And no, that's my thoughts.
I'm down for it. I love the Scary Movies, you know. But obviously, it sounds like the original creative team is not involved, which may be for the best.
Three of the nine producers of Scary Movie.
Which may be for the best, you know. Like, give it some new vision or, like, new take. I mean, the obvious choice for this would make it be weirdly to make it, like, a legacy sequel to the originals. Like, bring Anna Faris back as, like, this grizzled old lady who, in the vein of Neve Campbell or Jamie Lee Curtis. But, yeah, I think in concept, it's a cool idea. In the execution, it's like, I suspect it's going to be very difficult. How do you hit the right tone to like work in present day, but also sing ring true to the tone of the original movies? And yeah, I don't know. Does that type of parody, does that type of satire work?
I also feel like some of the problem is that when Scary Movie came out, it was following and it was parodying huge at the time, like the 90s horror movies were massive, right? They were massive at the box office. Like, you had all these big franchises coming out at the time. Now, horror movies, of course, every now and then you get one that does really well at the box office, but I don't know if there's collectively enough superstar horror franchises now that you could parody that everyone, like yourself, would collectively be in on the jokes, because you're like, oh yeah, it's Scream. It's I Know What I Did Last Summer. It's fucking this. It's Steven Spielberg. Fucking it's, you know, like whatever. You know, I just don't know if the collectively there's it carries that same parody weight to it.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like that also plays into, do you do it like surface level parody or more nuanced parody? No, can you pull off a new nuance? The first movie
was, you know, it's a parody
was Scream.
Of Scream with some other jokes in it.
Do they just? I don't know, but I'm keen to see them try. So, I mean, the other piece of news this week is that the full list of films to be shown at this year's Cannes Film Festival has been released. So that means it's time to catch up on this year's What Do You Want to Watch Movie Fantasy Game. We're going to each pick two films from the Cannes to add to our respective picks. In the fantasy game, so I'll do a quick update. As we're sitting here right now, the scores currently, Dylan with 67 points, and I'm with 50 points.
Fuck yeah.
And quite comfortably, of course, Dune, a big winning, big points together for Dylan at the moment, with 28 critic points and 20 box office points, seeing as it's number one at the box office worldwide at the moment. Still early days yet. I will say you did have a big hit with Imaginary, which lost 19 critic points, which was not a very good release. And a lot of my movies have still got to be released.
Damn you, Jason Blum.
I will say I've had two early hits this year with both Mickey 17 and Ballerina getting pushed to 2025. But they also offset by your choice to pick Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse and Paddington Peru, which probably will not be releasing this year. Paddington might get it like a festival run beforehand, so you get some reviews, but we'll see. But yeah, so seeing as you're the loser from last year, Dylan, you get the first pick out of the Cannes releases for this year. So what's your first pick?
Cannes of Kindness. Take that, Yorgos Lanthimos film. Right,
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Thank you. Take that film that I assumed you would have taken if I didn't. So grab that, motherfucker. Take that you know, Academy Award winning cast and director and... Well, you didn't director. But yeah, take that film. What a weird teaser trailer too, hey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Emma Stone dancing and just.
I mean, it worked. Yeah. I'm like, yes, I want to see this movie. Mm. I want to see it uncut, the dance. Yeah. My first pick is going to be The Apprentice, which is the film from Ali Abbasi, whose previous films include Holy Spider, Border, and Shelley. He's a prominent Khan regular. His Rotten Tomato scores are generally pretty high. Directed a few episodes of The Last of Us. But The Apprentice is the upcoming film in which Sebastian Stan plays Donald Trump as a follows his career as an early business person in the 70s and 80s. So yeah, I guess this one could go either way, but I'm hoping based on the pedigree of the director, it'll be a high score. All right, Dylan, what's your second pick? It's second and final pick for Khan.
Megalopolis.
Megalopolis.
Francis Ford Coppola sold his house, sold his kids, sold his family, sold his comic book collection, you know, to get the money. And there he's made, you know, his what will presumably be his last film. It has to be good, I fully believe. Last time he sold everything, he made Apocalypse Now. So, you know, history repeats itself.
All right. My second and final pick will be Anora, which is the upcoming film from Sean Baker, whose previous films include Tangerine, The Florida Project, and Red Rocket, all which did very well at Cannes or at film festivals. Apparently it's a romantic comedy starring Mikey Madison, who previously appeared in
Nothing
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Scream.
Oh, 2022 she's the, one. Yeah, okay, yeah.
She's the
girl who gets lit on fire in both those films.
Yeah.
So I'm not even a joke. That's a connecting factor.
That's the thing, connective tissue. So yeah, with that pedigree, again, I'm banking on pedigree to get, you know, some points. So yeah. So I'm looking forward to see how those play at Cannes. But let's talk about some movies that may be, or we're getting a, let's just move into thumbs up trailers. Not having a good day with segues. Of course, you can find all the trailers we're about to talk about in the show notes below. First up, we've got Maxine. Mm. Got to pronounce all those X's. Directed by Ty West, starring Mia Goth, Elizabeth Debicki, Moses Sumney, Michelle Monaghan, Bobby Cannavale, Lily Collins, Halsey, Giancarlo Esposito, and Kevin Bacon. In the 1980s, adult film star and aspiring actress Maxine Minx finally gets her big break. However, as a mysterious killer stalks the starlets of Los Angeles, a trail of blood threatens to reveal her sinister past. Alright, so I think it's a good trailer. I'll give it 2 thumbs up. Trying to figure out the lore here, right? So this is like a sequel to X, and Pearl is a prequel to X? Is that the chronological events? Yeah, okay. Yes. So
X is a film in which Mia Goth plays a girl who wants to be a star and she's doing pornos at the time. And then she also plays, spoilers, an old lady who starts fucking killing people when they go and film secretly a porno on her property. And then at the end of that movie, obviously Mia Goth's character, Maxine, survives. Then they did Pearl, which is a prequel where Mia Goth once again plays the old lady but as a young woman. And then this, Maxine, is after, years later, where it's based on the trailer. Maxine's like finally got into Hollywood. However, there's someone's like
trying to kill her.
They've got the real life killer in this, the
Night Stalker,
which is a real killer, but they're tying it in to say that someone's potentially going to reveal her past, like her bloody past as well, at the same time. Anyway, of course, I give this 2 thumbs up. I've watched the trailer many times. In fact, I think this is easily the best trailer I've watched all year. It's a fucking banger of a trailer.
It's pretty good. And, music, graphics, everything kind of hits.
And it's similar to, like, I thought before, when X's trailer first came out, I thought that was probably one of the best, if not the best trailer of that year as well. I remember that being such a banger of a trailer as well, like where that it just had so many great moments of like the song, the way it was edited and everything. I don't know who's putting together the trailer. If it's Ty West doing him himself, like he's fucking killing it. But like, I remember X had the trailer where like there's like the screaming and then it's like the sex scene or whatever. It's like the camera comes down, comes up the big X, and they're like post credit scenes. It's like the cops like coming to pick up the video camera, and they're like, ask the sheriff. He's like, what do you reckon's on? He's like, some fucked up horror movie or like something like that. It was such a cool trailer. Yes, this looks great. I can't wait. Obviously, I'm super excited for this because I love the other two movies. So I don't think that comes as any shock.
No. So this one is releasing in the US on the 5th of July, releasing here on the 1st of August. So, you know, only a month to wait. From what I understand, this one is being released by Universal here in Australia. Mm. So hopefully it's a little bit wider than the last few films. Who are distributed by smaller companies. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe it will screen in Tasmania. We'll see. Don't want to put the jinx on. We'll see. Next trailer is for Dark Matter, created by Blake Crouch, starring Joel Edgerton, Jennifer Connelly, and Alice Braga. A physicist in Chicago is warped into an alternate version of his life, leaving him to fight to return to his life to prevent the alternate version of himself from harming his family. Tom, what did you think of the trailer for Dark Matter?
I'm going to go one up, one down solely because it hooked me, and then I feel like it revealed a twist for me that I didn't need to see, which was just the fact that it's himself. I'm like, I don't know. That feels like it could have been, like, left. But anyway.
I don't know if that's a twist. I feel like that's the setup.
I don't know. I need someone who's read the book to tell me. Like, when's that revealed? You know what I mean?
That probably early on, I imagine. You know, I feel like that's something that's going to be revealed in the first episode. You know,
we'll see. I'm telling you, we'll see. So I don't know. That was the only thing. So I'm going to go one up, one down because of that. It gave me a little bit too much information, but otherwise, I'm keen. Looks good.
I'll give it one up, one down as well. I think it looks really good. I think it's an interesting premise, but I don't know, like, what's it going to be? Like, is it just going to be, oh, they pop into a different world every week and trying to figure out which one is his right one, you know? Why does he assume that the other Joel Edgerton wants to do bad stuff to his family? You know?
He kidnapped him?
Maybe he just wants... he is lonely and wants, you know, a family of his own because he can't have one for some reason, you know? But yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. There's some cool imagery in there. Some of the
Inception shit.
There is some Inception shit. And this is Blake Crouch is the writer of the actual book, so he's like clearly heavily involved in the show running. So
Apple's really getting into these hardcore
heavy sci-fi stuff, you know.
Heavy sci-fi shit.
You know, seen a lot of people very happy with that Constellation show that's been on
apparently
recently.
They're gonna shoot Silo 3 and 4 back to back. I heard today.
We can only hope. Rumor, you know, but yeah. That makes sense because Rebecca Ferguson is busy.
Yeah.
all right. So yeah, Dark Matter is coming to Apple TV Plus on May 8th. Next trailer is for Speak No Evil, directed by James Watkins, starring James McAvoy, Mackenzie Davis, Ailing Francisco, Frankiosi, Alex West, Leifa, Dan Hoff and Scoot McNairy. When an American family is invited to spend the weekend at the idyllic country estate of a charming British family they befriended on vacation, what begins as a dream holiday soon warps into a snarled psychological nightmare. Dylan, what do you think of the trailer for the American version of Speak No Evil?
Double thumbs down, it's dumb. It has it's so many just straight for straight. Just scene recreations. I don't feel like this is adding anything at all. In the original, they pretty much spoke English for a lot of the movie anyway. So I don't understand what this adds to bringing it to remaking. I don't understand what this has to say or do or what the purpose of this movie is. So double thumbs down. I didn't like it. I'll watch it anyway.
Did you just not like it because it is just so derivative?
Yeah, it just feels like absolutely pointless. pointless but and reveals.
Do you feel like, yeah, if you hadn't seen the original movie, would you feel that way?
I don't know, but I have. And the original trailer did not give away nearly as much as this did.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'll give it one up, one down. I think one up because James McAvoy seems like he's going 100% committed to this role. Going, you know,
full beast. Split
two.
Yeah.
Split three. I don't know. Very crazy. Obviously, yeah, I think it probably does give away too much. Like, it's pretty clear what, you know, that kid, T.I., he mimes exactly what happened to him. You know, it's pretty clear why he's not speaking. But yeah, I have no interest in watching it. So, but for a different reason than you don't want to watch it. So. All right.
I mean, I'll probably watch it, but I'm going into it thinking it's dumb.
All right. Speak No Evil is releasing in cinemas on the 12th of September. Next trailer is for Fly Me to the Moon, directed by Greg Berlanti, starring Scarlett Johansson, Channing Tatum, Nick Dillenberg, Anna Garcia, Jim Rash, Noah Robbins, Colin Waddell, Christian Zuba, Donald Elsie Watkins, Ray Romano, and Woody Harrelson. During the 1960s space race between the United States and the Soviet Union, a relationship develops between the NASA director in charge of the Apollo 11 launch and the marketing specialist brought in to fix NASA's public image and stage a backup fake moon landing. Tom, what do you think of a trailer for Fly Me to the Moon?
I'll go one up, one down. Looks fun. I think Channing Tatum looks weird with his haircut. you know, I always knew they faked the moon landing, so. And, yeah, that's about all I got to say on that one.
Yeah, I'll give it one up, down. One up, one down as well. Looks like it'll be a fun time, a nice spin on the romantic comedy, I guess, with this, you know, add in the space age, space race kind of stuff. Yeah, just the idea of the marketing of NASA and like, they're like talking about how shit NASA actually is and how terrible this space race thing is going. Yeah, I wish they'd dived a little bit more into like making the backup film, you know, I'm sure it's like, I don't know. Yeah, play into how real it is. Obviously, they make the joke at the end about getting Kubrick instead of whoever Jim Rash is playing, which obviously is a joke or like a reference to the belief that Kubrick shot the moon landing. So that's fun. Yeah, Channing Tatum, Scarlett Johansson look like they've got some sort of chemistry, you know, even though the opening joke is her book's on fire and he puts it out, you know.
What a pickup line.
How do you not notice your book's on fire? Anyway, Fly Me to the Moon is releasing in cinemas on the 11th of July. Last trailer for this week. Joker, Folie Dieu. Directed by Todd Phillips, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Lady Gaga, Zazie Beetz, Brendan Gleeson, and Catherine Keener. Failed comedian Arthur Fleck meets the love of his life, Harley Quinn, while incarcerated at Arkham State Hospital. Dylan, what did you think of the trailer for this Joker sequel?
Yeah, double thumbs up. Good trailer. Lots of vibrant sets and chemistry between the two. I think it's good. Well, it's a teaser, right? Or is it? Are they marking it?
It's a teaser trailer.
Yeah. So for a teaser,
but it's long enough to be included in the segment.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's double thumbs up. Fine for this. I do feel like by the full length proper trailer they put out, they better actually tell people this is a musical, or else some people get really fucking confused. Because this
no, that's not what they do anymore. They don't tell you it's a musical until you get in there. You paid for your ticket. The first song hits 15 minutes in, so you know you can't get a refund.
That's fair. Good point.
That's how the modern movie musical works.
Yeah, that's fair. So anyway, yeah, double thumbs up.
Yeah, double thumbs up. Cool imagery. You know, some artistic, you know, elements. I mean, it's kind of, in real life, that last shot of her putting the lipstick on the prison window doesn't work.
You mean the greatest shot in cinema history, Ash? I have
never... In real life, why was she... in she wants him to smile like you see on camera. But she's standing slightly to the side.
No, so no, that doesn't work. She's drawn it off to the side.
Yeah, she's drawn it off to the side, but then she can't see it.
Yeah, correct.
It doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense at all. But I'll have you know that
Top Gun looks cool.
Saved cinema with that shot. As the internet has told me many, many times over, this is cinema. Yeah. That shot.
I mean, it looks cool. There's some cool shots. Obviously, you've got a lot of stages and that kind of stuff. Really good use of what the world is now.
I'll tell you what the moment I knew that I'm in one camp and not another is I saw someone tweet out like that the gif of the shot and they said this is one of the best shots I've ever seen in my life. I was like, let's see what else this person tweets. Click on their profile. I couldn't help myself. Click on their profile. Tweet before that. Tell me how shit the Ripley series is and how bad the cinematography is in black and white. And I'm like, well, you know. That's really the decider, isn't it? I'm on here week before, beautiful film, absolutely sensational, some of the best cinematography in anything I've watched all year, and this dude's like, this is cinema, this is trash. I'm like, there's only two types of people, isn't there?
Yeah, so I'm keen. Lady Gaga looks really good in this. I think she's probably going to steal the show. Yeah. What are you keen for this movie? Like, obviously, we've had Joker's problematic.
Yeah, I didn't like Joker much. I thought it was pretty avo.
Obviously, this is going in a slightly different direction. So, I mean,
I'm gonna watch it, I
guess.
I love myself some Gaga, you know? So, I'm down. Like, a musical with Gaga in it, I'm fucking probably in for that. I thought I feel like if you listen to this show long enough, it's should be well documented that I thought the first one was a overhyped, you know, piece of not. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just fine. It was like, you know,
it was lifted by Joaquin Phoenix's performance. And
yeah, that was kind of that was about it. Yeah. So, am I going into this with full of excitement? Like, man, this is a sequel to one of my favorite movies of the last couple of years. No, yeah. So.
All right, Joker, Fall of Doom.
Joker 2.
Say what the name of the movie is at the end if you've got a weird title that nobody knows how to pronounce.
Fucking Joker
Please. 2. Releasing cinemas 3rd of October.
Joker 2. Todd Phillips thinks he's smarter than he is.
Dylan, this week, what do you want to watch?
What does it actually mean? Have we Googled this? What does it mean? Folie à deux, French for folly of two. Also known as a shared psychosis of shared delusional disorder, is a rare psychiatric syndrome in which symptoms are of a delusional belief and sometimes hallucinations are transmitted from one individual to another. I mean, that explains it because the trailer makes out like it's very obvious that they're daydreaming together about all these things they're doing and whatever, probably from inside the prison. So that makes sense. What am I excited to watch? What am I excited to watch? Good question. I'm excited to hopefully watch... hold on. Is that out this week? Fuck, you answer first because I forgot what I'm doing.
I'm excited to see Challengers.
That's...
The Zendaya film, which has been called the horniest film released this year everywhere. It's crazy. You know, obviously, it got delayed because of the actor strike last year to this year. I thought there would be more of a, like... press push already, but it doesn't seem like
they were in Melbourne or Sydney last week. I saw Zendaya and shit, so I don't know.
Like, weird. You know, I don't think I've been inundated with them being on a bunch of like websites and that kind of stuff. You know, like you doing Hot Wings and all that kind of stuff. Like all of these other
Conan
places do Conan and the Nugget place and those kind of hot. Taking questions while hugging puppies. That's what press celebrities do. It's part of the press tools now.
True. That's what I was trying to think of. For that. Yeah, so that's my answer as well. And then the Sympathizer is out today.
Yes. And as of recording, Sympathizer. We'll want to check that out as well.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, Abigail, I'm excited to watch. So.
Yeah, Abigail this week as well. You're not super excited for Rebel Moon 2, The Scargiver? Silence is deafening. poor Kong and the Planet of the Apes. Kong vs. Godzilla, you know? Their big villain, the Scar King. Now there's another movie called The Scargiver. They can't, like, get a break with anything. You know? Everything that in
sucks some- being ape, you know?
It does. All right. Let us know what you are excited to watch this week by going to explosion.com/Twitter or jump to Discord at explosion.com/Discord. If you want to help us out here at What Do You Want to Watch, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser. Leave us 5 stars. Any can leave 5 stars or just tell people about the show. And if you've enjoyed this episode, thought it was worth a dollar, head on over to our Ko-fi page at explosion.com/support. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, keep watching stuff, I guess.